Often.
And so have I,
exclaimed another. So had all, but he was very light to carry, she resumed, intent upon her work. And his father loved him so, that it was no trouble, no trouble. And there is your father at the door. She hurried out to meet him, and little Bob in his comforter, he had need of it, poor fellow, came in. His tea was ready for him on the hob, and they all tried who should help him to it most. Then the two young Cratchits got upon his knee and laid, each child, a little cheek against his face, as if they said, "Don't mind, father, don't be grieved." Bob was very cheerful with them, and spoke pleasantly to all the family. He looked at the work upon the table and praised the industry and speed of Mrs. Cratchit and the girls. They would be done long before Sunday, he said.
Sunday? You went today, then, Robert?
Said his wife.
Yes, my dear, returned Bob. I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. But you'll see it often. I promised him that I would walk there on a Sunday. My little, little child, cried Bob. My little child.
He broke down all at once. He couldn't help it. If he could have helped it, he and his child would have been farther apart, perhaps, than they were. He left the room and went upstairs into the room above, which was lighted cheerfully and hung with Christmas. There was a chair set close beside the child, and there were signs of someone having been there lately. Poor Bob sat down in it, and when he had thought a little and composed himself, he kissed the little face. He was reconciled to what had happened, and went down again quite happy. They drew about the fire and talked, the girls and mother working still. Bob told them of the extraordinary kindness of Mr. Scrooge's nephew, whom he had scarcely seen but once, and who, meeting him in the streets that day, and seeing that he looked a little,
"Just a little down, you know,"
said Bob, inquired what had happened to distress him. On which, said Bob, for he is the pleasantest-spoken gentleman you have ever heard, I told him, "I am heartily sorry for it, Mr. Cratchit," he said, "and heartily sorry for your good wife. By the by, how he ever knew that, I don't know."
"Knew what, my dear?"
"Why, that you were a good wife," replied Bob.
"Everybody knows that," said Peter.
"Very well observed, my boy," cried Bob. "I hope they do. Heartily sorry," he said, "for your good wife. If I can be of service to you in any way," he said, giving me his card, "that's where I live. Pray come to me." "Now it wasn't," cried Bob, "for the sake of anything he might be able to do for us, so much as for his kind way, that this was quite delightful. It really seemed as if he'd known our tiny Tim and felt with us."
"I'm sure he's a good soul," said Mrs. Cratchit.
"You would be sure of it, my dear," returned Bob, "if you saw and spoke to him. I shouldn't be at all surprised, mark what I say, if he got Peter a better situation."
"Only hear that, Peter," said Mrs. Cratchit. "And then," cried one of the girls, "Peter will be keeping company with someone and setting up for himself."
"Get along with you," retorted Peter, grinning.
"It's just as likely as not," said Bob. "One of these days, though there's plenty of time for that, my dear. But however and whenever we part from one another, I am sure we shall none of us forget poor tiny Tim, shall we? Or this first parting that there was among us."
"Never, father,"
cried they all.
"And I know," said Bob, "I know, my dears, that when we recollect how patient and how mild he was, although he was a little, little child, we shall not quarrel easily among ourselves and forget poor tiny Tim in doing it."
"No, never, father,"
they all cried again.
"I am very happy," said little Bob. "I am very happy."
Mrs. Cratchit kissed him, his daughters kissed him, the two young Cratchits kissed him, and Peter himself shook hands. "Spirit of tiny Tim, thy childish essence was from God."
"Spectre," said Scrooge, "something informs me that our parting moment is at hand. I know it, but I know not how. Tell me, what man that was whom we saw lying dead?"
"The ghost of Christmas yet to come conveyed him as before, though at a different time," he thought. Indeed, there seemed no order in these latter visions, save that they were in the future, and to the resorts of business men, but showed him not himself. Indeed, the spirit did not stay for anything, but went straight on, as to the end just now desired, until besought by Scrooge to tarry for a moment.
"This court," said Scrooge, "through which we hurry now is where my place of occupation is, and has been for a length of time. I see the house. Let me behold what I shall be in days to come."
The spirit stopped. The hand was pointed elsewhere.
"The house is yonder," Scrooge exclaimed. "Why do you point away?" The inexorable finger underwent no change. Scrooge hastened to the window of his office and looked in. It was an office still, but not his. The furniture was not the same, and the figure in the chair was not himself. The phantom pointed as before. He joined it once again, and wondering why and whither he had gone, accompanied it until they reached an iron gate. He paused to look round before entering. A churchyard. Here, there, the wretched man whose name he had now to learn lay underneath the ground. It was a worthy place, walled in by houses, overrun by grass and weeds, the growth of vegetation's death, not life, choked up with too much burying, fat with repleted appetite. A worthy place. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one. He advanced towards it, trembling. The phantom was exactly as it had been, but he dreaded that he saw new meaning in its solemn shape. "Before I draw nearer to that stone to which you point," said Scrooge, "answer me one question. Are these the shadows of things that will be, or are they the shadows of things that may be only?" Still the ghost pointed downward to the grave by which it stood. "Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends to which, if preserved in, they must lead," said Scrooge. "But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me." The spirit was immovable as ever. Scrooge crept towards it, trembling as he went, and following the finger, read upon the stone of the neglected grave his own name, Ebenezer Scrooge.
"Am I that man who lay upon the bed?"
he cried upon his knees. The finger pointed from the grave to him and back again.
"No, spirit, oh no, no!"
The finger still was there.
"Spirit,"
he cried, tight clutching at its robe.
"Hear me. I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been but for this intercourse. Why show me this if I am past all hope?"
For the first time, the hand appeared to shake.
"Good spirit,"
he pursued, as down upon the ground he fell before it.
"Your nature intercedes for me and pities me. Assure me that I yet may change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life."
The kind hand trembled.
"I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone!"
In his agony, he caught the spectral hand. It sought to free itself, but he was strong in his entreaty and detained it. The spirit, stronger yet, repulsed him. Holding up his hands in a last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost. Stave 5, the end of it. Yes, and the bedpost was his own, the bed was his own, the room was his own. Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in. "I will live in the past, the present, and the future," Scrooge repeated as he scrambled out of bed. "The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven and the Christmas time be praised for this. I say it on my knees, old Jacob, on my knees!" He was so fluttered and so glowing with his good intentions that his broken voice would scarcely answer to his call. He had been sobbing violently in the conflict with the spirit, and his face was wet with tears.
"They are not torn down,"
cried Scrooge, folding one of his bed curtains in his arms.
"They are not torn down, rings and all. They are here. I am here. The shadows of the things that would have been may be dispelled. They will be. I know they will."
His hands were busy with his garments all this time, turning them inside out, putting them on upside down, tearing them, mislaying them, making them parties to every kind of extravagance.
"I don't know what to do,"
cried Scrooge, laughing and crying in the same breath, and making a perfect Laocoon of himself with his stockings.
"I am as light as a feather. I am as happy as an angel. I am as merry as a schoolboy. I am as giddy as a drunken man. A Merry Christmas to everybody. A Happy New Year to all the world. Hello there, whoop, hello!"
He had frisked into the sitting room and was now standing there, perfectly winded.
"There's the saucepan the gruel was in,"
cried Scrooge, starting off again and going round the fireplace.
"There's the door by which the ghost of Jacob Marley entered. There's the corner..."